Good morning and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. It's where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and joining me this week is Dr. Malihay Mohammadpour, neuro-oncology attending at JFK University Medical Center. Good morning, doctor.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We're going to talk about lots of stuff today. I want to discuss, where we could start is, what are some of the types of patients that you see?
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. So as you might know, neuro-oncology is relatively a new field in the medical science. In my practice, we usually take care of patients with primary and secondary brain tumors. It can be brain and also spinal tumors. We also take care of neurological complications that can accompany cancer and also it can happen with cancer treatment, including immune-related changes, myopathy, encephalopathy, or CAR T-cell-related CNS complications. Mm-hmm. By primary brain tumors, I mean it could be glioma, which includes astrocytoma, oligodendroglioma, and glioblastomas. I also take care of patients with meningiomas and acoustic neuromas. I would take care of patients with brain metastases and leptomeningeal diseases. By leptomeningeal diseases, I mean when the cancer really is spread to the brain and the spinal fluid. I take care of patients with paraneoplastic symptoms and radiation necrosis, chemotherapy-related cognitive impairments.
So you say the primary brain tumors. Are there thousands of types of brain tumors, or is it just the ones you mentioned?
There are many different types of brain tumors, but the most common are the ones that I mentioned, like gliomas and astrocytomas, glioblastoma. We also take care of a very rare entity. It's called primary CNS lymphoma. It is really rare, but it's a very impactful condition. But the good news is we have a good treatment for it, and in some cases, it will be cured.
Mm-hmm. And that's primary CNS lymphoma, you said?
Correct.
Okay, and that's a rare one. And then one of the most common ones you said is gliomas?
Gliomas. Yeah.
So what is involved in let's start with what you say is a primary brain tumor. What happens to the patient that causes this to occur?
Yeah, there are many different reasons that we think might be leading to this kind of tumors. Unfortunately, we don't have enough data. But some of the causes are radiation in the area. Sometimes they say exposure to some sort of radiation could potentially cause gliomas. There is no real data about what type of lifestyle or diet or things underlying diseases could cause this kind of tumors. There are certain types of gliomas that are inherited, and it can happen through the generations. They're very rare, and usually for those kind of tumors, if we are suspicious, we will ask the patient to get a germline evaluation, which is a type of blood test that we ask for the patient to give it to us for next generation sequencing to check for specific mutations that can happen in the patient and their family members. But it is very rare. Most of the gliomas are really unknown in terms of the reason for happening. And they're the most common types of primary brain tumors. The symptoms that might happen depends on the type of the glioma is very different. Mm-hmm. Patients who develop glioma in a younger age, they usually have a lower grade type of glioma, and it might happen with chronic headaches, weakness, numbness. Depends on the location of the tumor in the brain. We might encounter different types of symptoms. But in patients who are older, usually the type of the glioma is a higher grade. Unfortunately, this can happen suddenly, like the growth is so fast. that the patient even doesn't recognize that they have a brain tumor. And it is diagnosed when the tumor is like having a lot of mass effect on the brain or has a bleeding. Sometimes it can present with a first-time seizure in life. So that's why when patients come with headaches that are new to them or a different type of headache from their chronic headaches, we usually recommend our primary care teams to really screen these kind of patients with MRI brain. And then once the patient is kind of established and we know there is a tumor in their brain, usually they meet with our neurosurgeons, and it depends on the location, the tumor will be resected or biopsied. Mm-hmm. And then after having the pathology, we have a multidisciplinary team who will see this kind of tumors with different angles, from different angles, basically. Right. We will have radiation oncology in our team. We will have neuro-oncology based, and we will have kind of epileptologists. We will have cognitive behavior scientists, of course, neurosurgeon, and most of the conversation will happen in our tumor board. And during the tumor board, we will discuss what will be the next approach. The standard of care for most of these tumors are being guided by different guidelines. And then, for example, for glioma patients, the standard of care is kind of a trial, it's called a Stupp trial, which includes temozolomide and radiation, followed by 12 cycles or 6 cycles of temozolomide. Hmm. But for primary CNS lymphoma, the approach is completely different. So based on the different etiologies and different tumors, we will have a plan in our tumor board, and then we discuss it with the patient and their family members, and we kind of lay out a kind of a path for them.
Talking with Dr. Amalihay Mohammadpour, if we could just jump back for a second, you talked about the symptoms, and you mentioned headaches, numbness. When you say with a symptom of numbness, I guess this is a two-part question. One is, are these symptoms like numbness? Is that strictly you're going to get that symptom in your head, or it could be anywhere in the body? And the other question is, is there anything people can do to prevent? I know you said that we don't know what the cause of these are, so I'm assuming that there's nothing that anybody can do in their everyday life to prevent this from happening.
Yes. So in terms of the symptoms, as I mentioned, usually it's a new onset type of headache. Weakness can happen, like, for example, like a facial droop. It can happen weakness in the arm, one arm or another arm, you know, like in the legs. Depends that the primary care physician or neurologist are usually, when they see something like that, if the patient ends up in the emergency department, they examine the patient, and based on the examination, we are usually able to really localize the tumor or the lesion, basically. And usually the first thing we do is getting a CT head. They try to rule out a stroke. And then if we find something that is suspicious for brain tumor, we definitely get an MRI. Other symptoms that can happen depends on the location is, for example, difficulty naming or word-finding difficulties. These are very general symptoms that can happen in any type of neurological problem. The reason why I'm saying these symptoms is because they can be alarming for patients and their family members when they encounter this kind of situation. They need to call 911 and contact their primary physician and eventually go to the emergency department to be evaluated, because the first thing is stroke, which is the most common thing, and this has to be ruled out. And then after getting further imaging, we would define if this is a tumor-like mass, and then we will get an MRI, and then, of course, we will kind of follow the path towards, like, getting more information, including getting tissue biopsy or resection.
Yeah, many people, this happens to them totally by surprise. From kids on up to adults, and they're just living their life, everything's fine, and then all of a sudden, something happens. And that's when Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Especially if this is a higher grade, usually. Or sometimes the tumor happens that the tumor will have a bleeding inside and will cause more symptoms. So it's just the indolent tumor doesn't show any symptoms, and all of a sudden something happens to the tumor. It just starts more activation, have more swelling, or there's a bleeding. And most of the time, especially with the lower grade tumors, we will find them incidentally. For example, the kid might have like a fall and then hit his head or her head. And then we get in a scan and see, oh, there is an incidental mass. Most of the meningiomas, in fact, are very indolent, and we will find them incidentally, especially in older people. It's very common and depends on the size of the meningioma, because it's a relatively benign tumor. It depends on the size and the features on the MRI. We decide if we need to get any biopsy, if we need to resect it, or just watch it. Many of the tumors, even in gliomas, we find them, especially in younger age, if they're asymptomatic, we just do the serial imaging. We watch them if there is no concerning in terms of growth, or we feel like this is just too small, or it's probably just a lower grade. But nowadays we say it's good to have a biopsy on tumors that we don't know what's the etiology and what's the type of the tumor.
Right, that was my question when you said that, but then I guess you just answered my question. If you see something, you said it's too small, but you do need to get a biopsy. You don't know what it is,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, it depends on the type of the imaging features. Again, like, for example, for meningioma, we don't necessarily need to obtain a biopsy. The MRI is telling us this is most likely a meningioma, and it's too small, doesn't have mass effect on the MRI, doesn't cause symptoms. We don't need to do anything. We just watch it. For glioma, so of course, we need to have a biopsy because we never know what's the stage. For primary CNS lymphoma, also the imaging and presentation might be a little bit different. For example, in elderly patients with primary CNS lymphoma, sometimes they might have some visual symptoms way before. So it could be floaters in their eyes. And sometimes they get evaluation by the ophthalmologist. And it's very common that ophthalmologists will take a look at a slit lamp. It's a device that they take a look at the eye. And if they find tumor cells in the vitreal and they notice that there's potential lymphoma, they usually refer the patients to neurologists. And the neurologist will do MRI brain and spine. And sometimes we also do lumbar spine, basically obtaining some CSF fluid from the through the lumbar spine.
So when someone sees a floater, that doesn't necessarily mean it has anything to do with the brain. It could just be an eye issue, right?
Exactly. Right. So that's why they need to see a neurologist. Neuro-ophthalmologist.
Ophthalmologist first, and then they would be referred.
Exactly. So, yeah, the floater is very common, and it's nothing. Most of the time, it's just retinal issues. But that's very different from when we see cells in the vitreal, which is like a chamber of the eye. It's in front of the retina. It's not a retinal disease. And the ophthalmologist will tell the patient, look, this is not just a normal floater, and you just have to follow up with your neurologist and get some more information and more workup done. The reason why I'm saying floater is because I want people to think about it and get evaluation, just not to be kind of scared. You know, it's very common. I also have floaters myself. Yeah. I have floaters. I went to an ophthalmologist because since I've seen this kind of patient, I went to my ophthalmologist. I said, please take a look. Just make sure I don't have lymphoma. And, of course, it was just the normal floaters that happens. And, of course, it has to be taken care of by ophthalmologist and fixed. But if it's fixable.
So it happened to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
It happened to me, actually.
Was it the retina? Something with the retina?
Yes, I actually have to follow up with them, yes, but it was ready. It's very common, which it can happen in any age. But in older people, I would recommend if they see floaters, reach out to the ophthalmologist, just check it.
Yeah, get it checked out. Anytime you have any type of, you know, symptom like that,
exactly.
You want to get it checked out because it doesn't fix itself.
Exactly. And it's also, especially in neurological finding and symptoms, it's always good to be checked out and, you know, like talk to your primary care physician and neurologist. Just
Yeah, it can't hurt. It can't hurt to get checked out.
It can hurt, exactly.
Now, if you get occasional numbness in your leg because you were sitting funny, there's no need to panic and run to the doctor for that. But when you have something consistent, is what we're talking about, right? So let's talk about neuro-oncology. You said it's relatively new, but there have been advancements.
Oh yes. Yeah. This is actually the exciting part. For physicians who are taking care of cancer patients and for the patients also, because I can say over the past 15 to 20 years, the field of oncology overall and neuro-oncology has been advanced and has been like growing. With the help of next-generation sequencing and the new drug developments, which has been very fast, like it's been very quick, to design a drug, to have it approved by FDA. Everything is like really getting to a safer and faster route. So the next generation sequencing has helped us to sequence the tumors. We also have the availability of the next generation sequencing in our institution, which is very, very interesting because when I left Memorial Sloan Kettering, I thought I'd be having no army of those kind of, power clinic advancements. But when you go to central New Jersey and you find that there is a next generation sequencing, equipment, and then you can send the tumors for that, and you have all the, you have access to all the available advancement in the field, that's very exciting to know. By using the next-generation sequencing, we will find if the tumor has any mutation, any type of fusion, any kind of targeted kind of mutation that we can potentially use the targeted therapy. So other than targeted therapy that are very common in certain types of, specifically pediatric glioma, we have, like, for example, BRAF, we have... sometimes we have other types of mutation that can be targeted by different medication. We also can use immunotherapy, which is very new to this field. And, of course, it's very new to neuro-oncology because most of the initial trials for other cancers, they've been excluding patients with brain tumor and leptomeningeal disease. But now we have this privilege to really design clinical trials that include patients with brain metastases, or even they're solely designed for glioma patients. So we don't have any conclusive data yet that if the immunotherapy is really the patients are responsive to immunotherapy, but there's some cases that they have complete response or partial response. That's why we're trying to find out what would be the best case scenario and the best situation to provide this kind of treatment to our patients.
Is it trial and error, or is it something depending on the patient? You from experience, you decide, all right, this therapy is would be best for this particular patient.
For glioma patients, especially glioblastoma patients, it's really we don't have any solid data yet because all is a clinical trials and. Getting to the conclusion for each clinical trial, they need to do interim analysis, and sometimes having the impact on the survival or progression-free survival takes years and years to really get the, sometimes, so for example, even for chemotherapy treatments, the trials have been gone for 5 years, and then we get the results after 5 years. So, but we do have interim analysis, and based on the objective responses, sometimes we say, okay, this trial had, for example, this amount of complete response or partial response or stable disease. So based on that, we sometimes decide to design another clinical trial, or if the medication has been approved by FDA, just to do a trial and error, just to say, okay, I'm going to try this medication on this patient. But having a good result or conclusive data usually takes years, and most of the trials that are very in the juvenile, basically, they're infants now, in infancy stage. So for those, we need more years to wait a little bit to have more results. But there's so many trials coming up just to understand, for example, the combination therapies, like a combination of radiation, in mostly on patients with recurrent disease, because for newly diagnosed, we try to stick with the standard of care or with the treatment that is already been kind of approved or there's strong data about it.
We have a few minutes left, but I do want to get into it. We're talking with Dr. Melihe Mohammadpour, who is a neuro-oncology attending at JFK University Medical Center. Now, it's not just you. I mean, this is a team that you work with at JFK. Tell us about this multidisciplinary team that you have there at the neuro-oncology department.
Yes, we are two neuro-oncologists at JFK Hospital, Dr. Joseph Landolfi and me. We also have a team of neurosurgeons who will take care of multiple different types of tumors and different locations. We have a neurosurgeon who's dedicated to skull-based, for example, tumors. We have a neurosurgeon who's really dedicated to spinal tumors. And then most of the neurosurgeons are involved with tumors that are primary brain or secondary brain tumors, mm-hmm. including metastatic diseases or primary glioma. We also have radiation oncologists, who's also part a very important part of the whole conversation. We have nurse practitioners, we have physician assistants and nurses, and of course, people who are sitting answering all the phones are the most important people who can navigate, you know, the care for the patients, make sure everything is done, blood work. It takes a village to really take care of even one patient with a brain tumor, because this is a very sensitive area of the body. We need to make sure that anytime we check on the patient, if there is new symptoms, we need to, you know, act very fast, make sure there's nothing serious going on, and make sure that the chemotherapy is delivered and it's been taken by the patients correctly, and make sure that blood work that we need to do, sometimes weekly blood work for patients, to make sure that the side effects of chemotherapy is not causing an issue for the patient.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
Sure. Well, I just hope that we can... I really appreciate you for giving me this opportunity, and
thank you.
I would love to. I'm available anytime. If there is any questions, I can provide you my information. I hope this really provides some valuable insight to the critical work that we're kind of doing in the field of taking care of the brain cancers. And I'm really hopeful for the future that with this new development and science, we'll be able to find a cure for at least part of the neuro-oncological problems, and hopefully for the all.
Yeah, and if anyone has, experiencing any symptoms, they can contact you. I will give out the website in just a moment. Doctor, thank you.
Sure, of course. Thank you so much.
Yeah. For more information, go to jfkmc.org, or for a podcast of this show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com or magic983.com. JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz, and we'll talk again next week.